Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. I'm still recovering from flannel panel yesterday, but what a great show we've got for you today. Second hour, Tim Staples will be here, and that's always fun. First hour, for the first time in studio, after I think probably a decade and a half of appearing on this show, something like that, but first time in studio with us, and we are delighted to welcome him, Father Tad Boholcek. If you pay attention to Catholic media, you probably are familiar with Father Tad's work. He works for the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and has helped many, many of us to work through bioethical and general ethical questions. Father Tad Boholcek, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me, Cy. It's a lot of fun to, you know, be here in the studio with you for that first time.
I know.
It really gives me a sense of what I've been doing for a while, you know, behind the scenes. And
yeah, this is where it all happens.
This is where it unfolds.
This is where it all happens. And you came in and we introduced you to our former priest here, an AI priest today.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. Asked him some hard questions, you know, about ethics.
But you didn't grade him super highly on the bioethics.
Yeah,
it
was, he was good, but, you know, I think the fact that he has a very limited space to give an answer, he may overcompress his answers. But it's a great first starting point, I think. And, you know, I think it'll be useful in the future. People will turn to it.
Right. Very few people say that anything that a Catholic Answers has too few words involved in it. That's
right.
A very rare critique. But we had, I think, with that like that compression is actually a feature of it because he was kind of being comprehensive, and it was not helpful. It was too much.
It was too broad. Yeah.
Yeah.
He needed to get into a little bit of detail because the question itself was so complicated, and he didn't know where to draw the line exactly.
No, he actually doesn't know anything, and I kind of bring that up because we're going to talk about AI today. We usually talk to you about life issues, health issues, biotechnologies, all that kind of stuff. But you've been studying up on AI. And now the Vatican has a new document. One of the dicasteries of the Vatican put out a new document that got a good amount of attention this week on AI. It's called Ancient and New. And then the Chinese came out with a new AI that startled everybody. People are calling it a Sputnik moment and that kind of thing.
It's remarkable.
So it's the time to talk about AI. And if I could just, in general, as a Catholic, should I be disposed towards, disposed against, wildly suspicious of? How should I be disposed towards artificial intelligence?
Well, so I would say, you know, it's easy to look at something like this and feel like the technology is galloping, it's extremely powerful, and you may be saying in the back of your mind there are also some people who are behind it who I don't really trust, so I don't know what they're going to be sort of sneaking in sideways. Those are legitimate kinds of concerns, and I think they kind of circle back when we get into the ethics a bit. But at the end of the day, I mean, if you really ask sort of the nub of the question, is this something that's inherently bad? The answer has to be no. I mean, if this is deployed in a reasonable fashion and, you know, certain other goods that are part of our journey as humans are safeguarded during the deployment of the technology, it can serve in powerful ways, presumably to assist us. And, you know, maybe let me just throw out a kind of crazy example, but not so crazy. You know, we've just had this this incredibly tragic event in D.C. where the plane goes down. And we know it was a helicopter that was in the flight path. And so everybody's starting to say, you know, whose fault was it? Should the helicopter pilot have known? Should the people in the tower? You know, and this is going to go on, I'm sure, for quite a while as we try to figure out the fine details. But I think when we ask a question like, could AI be of assistance in a situation like this? Because what does AI really do? I mean, it's looking at a whole bunch of different sort of channels of information and reading out probabilities. So, for example, if you could hook up an AI to an entire airport's airspace, and it would be tracking the flights that are coming and going. And I suspect it would do it much higher, detail and effectiveness than the humans in the tower. Now, in this particular case of the crash, from what I've seen, there was maybe 30 seconds before the crash when the tower contacted the helicopter pilot and said, you know, do you see the incoming plane? And he replied something apparently, you know, indicating he was going to move out of the way or something. But if AI had been plotting the probabilities of particular paths intersecting,
yeah,
it might have given them 2 minutes, 3 minutes ahead of time, knowing that this helicopter was going down the river ahead of time. So I would say, you know, that's a perfect example of a place where AI is going to be able to handle all those variables much better than you and me. And if, you know, I think the tricky question becomes, do you want to just hand off this completely so that if AI sees that there's going to be a collision, it suddenly radios directly to the pilot and says, pull up?
Yeah.
Or do we want to go about this a little more cautiously and say, no, AI has to always go to the tower. Everything's going to be through the, you know, there are those kinds of questions which you're going to have to finesse and get right so that, you know, it's not just machines running things, because, of course, they can misfunction as well. And just, you know, on that note, briefly, I think one of the concerns around AI has been that as the databases that are used for training it get larger and larger, and, you know, some of the data is not internally completely congruent with itself, you get these phenomena called hallucinations.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's why you're afraid to maybe hand over something like this. But could it advise?
Yeah, because what if it hallucinates?
What if it hallucinates
when there's
right
hundreds of lives on the line?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. But there was an if in your statement that bothers me, and that is if we can defend all and I'll paraphrase what you said, you know, if we can defend the human goods that we've...
Yes.
My experience or my sense of the modern world, say since 1820, you know, the Industrial Revolution, is that's exactly what we don't do.
Yeah.
That we always go too far, that we always have to...
Yeah, and that there's at times these kinds of almost, I don't know if I want to call them malicious actors, but other driving motivations. In other words, the good of the human person is not the first concern, and it becomes rather revenue streams are the first concern. So, you know, I think of what's a really good example of AI that's already affecting all of us. Well, you go on to the YouTube, you go on to your computer and you watch maybe YouTube, but especially something like TikTok.
Yeah.
And you sit down and you start watching it. What happens? Before you know what's happened, 3 hours have passed because the AI has been watching what you're doing and feeding you more and more things over and over.
Yeah.
So
I know why you chose that example, because I told you that happened to me. And I don't mind talking about it, because I do feel like I'm a grown up. I'm a mature person. I'm not a 13-year-old. And I felt that Instagram, the time that I tried it, was more powerful than I was. And I just took it off my phone. It knew what to give me to the point where I lost track of time, and I did not like that experience.
Isn't that incredible?
It
really says these algorithms are very sophisticated.
Yeah.
Very, you know, they track what we do with a high degree of precision. And I mean, I agree, when I go onto YouTube, you know, when they put the little panel of choices on the right side, I say, wow, those look like really interesting videos. And I have to, you know, intentionally tell myself, I don't have time for this right now.
Right.
You know?
And yeah. So that's the thing is, like, the AI, well, first of all, let me just start with the most basic level of complaint or worry we have about AI. There are people, and I'm not using this figuratively, they literally will say, it's demons.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our response to that?
Well, I mean, one just can't say it that way, because first of all, the technology itself is in a process of being developed, so it doesn't have some final form where you can ascribe it that kind of, you know, definitive characteristic. And I think it is a tool, truly, at the end of the day, and we always have a choice of how we can use tools, whether for good or for ill. That would be roughly analogous to saying, well, cell phones are just always evil or something. And it's like, we all know that's not true. They have good uses, they have bad uses. And, you know, unfortunately, in some people's lives, the bad uses may end up preponderating, taking over.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the hands of certain industries, this may be a little bit more directed against the goods that we're trying to safeguard for humanity. But I don't think it's fair to make a general conclusion of that sort. It's too strong, and the data don't support, not data, but just the whole analysis of looking at what AI is.
So let me take you to a second level of complaint, which is, look, we don't let everybody, technological advance is great and everything. We don't let everybody have their own nuclear bomb. And this stuff is as powerful as a nuclear bomb. How can we let it just be out there in the world?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I think OpenAI has wanted very much to hold on to the controls of this and, charge people to be able to utilize their algorithms and put in, requests. And so that's why the Chinese thing sort of blew this open, because it suddenly became possible for everybody to download the whole DeepSeek, both parts of it, really, and have the thing running either on your cell phone or on a laptop or something like that. I mean, you'd need a powerful one, I think, to do it fully. But it was set up so that it would be really accessible as open source.
Mm-hmm.
So, the question of, is that a nuclear bomb that we're giving to people? I don't think it's quite the same. But
okay.
I do think it is going to open up many new challenges for people. And, we should probably talk about what some of those are when you, for example, shift into an educational arena.
Okay, right.
I mean, you think about kids today and the temptation to just grab stuff off the internet and call it their own. I taught a bioethics class for a long time, bioethics, and you'd say, well, the people who are going to sign up and take this, they're going to at least try to be ethical. But I had people, who were plagiarizing stuff off the internet.
Were they at least biological?
Well,
they covered that side.
They certainly did.
Yeah,
yes.
But they weren't ethical biological creatures.
That was the thing. So that was a strong temptation just with the internet. Now you throw in a machine that can write for you and write very convincingly.
Yes.
You may remember Jordan Peterson at one point made a comment. He said, I have asked some AI, I don't know which one he was using, to go through all of my writings and then to write something as if it was me. And he said, and then I read the thing, and it was me.
Wow.
He was really impressed by how the AI could mimic him.
Yeah, that's too much. It's a lot of power.
It is.
But it's the thing on the educational side is, for example, if it does seem pretty clear now that the AI will get, within a short amount of time, very good at translating. So there now, more and more, you can say, you can speak Italian, I can't, but I can go to Italy and I can probably function just fine there because I'll have something that will instantaneously translate both what's said to me and what I am saying.
Yes.
So there's a great good in that.
Yes. So, I agree, there's a great good, but let me just also sort of bring out the flip side of this, because I was talking with somebody recently and they had help at their house. So people, would come, I don't know, once a month and kind of do general cleaning. And some of these individuals spoke only Spanish.
Okay.
And so these, and the people whose house they were cleaning spoke only English. So they used the cell phone to do all the communication.
Right.
And then I said to them, well, how long have these individuals been in the country doing cleaning? And the answer was, I think 12 years or 13 years.
You said,
oh, they haven't bothered to learn the language.
Right.
Now, is that a function of the fact that on some level they know the people whose houses they're going to clean, they can always interact in these other ways using technology and avoid having to invest to learn the language?
Well, that's the ultimate question then is, if the machines become so smart they can do almost anything for us, do we become dumb?
That's it. And, at the end of the day, it becomes even a question like, what was that movie? Was it Wall-E's
Oh, yeah,
World?
Wall-E.
Wall-E. That was it. Where you have the big blob guy sitting in the chair doing nothing, everything's being done around him, and he's just sort of, getting bigger and bigger and more passive. And I think that's true. There's this danger of a loss of agency.
Mm-hmm.
And agency is a good thing for us. And I think sometimes agency, energetically pursued, changes us. So back to the education thing, being able to just tell the AI to write something for you versus you having to go through and process multiple sources and then write it down yourself in your own words and your own thought and your own order. There's something hugely valuable for us to actually do that.
Yes,
and we don't want to lose the process there. And, I'm thinking about somebody else I heard about who, she was translating, I think it was from Greek to Syriac to Arabic to Latin, certain passages from antiquity. Now, that's a heck of a lot of translating and some very, very complicated questions. And she said at one point, especially when we were going through the Arabic, every single letter counted. And I had you had to spend enormous mental energy focusing on, you know, how the individual letter affected the nature of the next translation that you were making.
Right.
So you would be translating and not being a traitor to, you know, what you were translating. And so, but then she said at the end of it, but this whole exercise was so good as formation for me and served me, you know, as a young person. Now, many years later, she worked for the State Department, I think, and, you know, did other things.
Yeah.
So, again, there's this sort of how much are we willing to push ourselves, get out of the WALL-E mode, right, and grow in these possibilities that are resident within us and that are indeed being, I think, called and challenged to a higher utilization.
He is a doctor, twice over, I think. But Father Tad Pohlchik, you always address a person by their highest honorific.
Nice.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
And Father is the highest.
Yeah, agreed.
Father Tad Pohlchik, our guest. Usually we talk about bioethics. We're talking about AI today. If you have questions about the ethical use of AI, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Each week on The World Over, we try to bring you perspectives you're not going to see anywhere else, even in Catholic media. And we also try to bring those cultural figures, world leaders, decision makers, to the audience in, I hope, vibrant way.
The World Over with Raymond Arroyo, tonight, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Father Tad Pohlchik from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And for years, you were the Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And now your title is?
Senior Ethicist.
Senior Ethicist. Well,
sounds pretty good, but didn't come with any pay
jump.
No,
don't play it down. Oh, it didn't come with a pay raise. Well, forget it. Who's your agent? I'll talk to him. You need to use my agent, Les Grossman. the number here is 888-318-7884. If you want to talk about AI from the Catholic perspective, we would love to have your call. You most certainly do not have to be Catholic to call. Anybody's welcome to call. 888-318-7884. So the Vatican comes out with a new document on AI. Just for fun, I had the AI read it for me and summarize it.
I read it.
And then it did all right. It did. It missed maybe some of the
nuances.
Well, you know what? It didn't really report to me on. There's a whole part of the Vatican document is on human intelligence and what human intelligence is and what the meaning is. The AI just ignored all that.
I found that section to be, you know, heavily philosophical.
Yeah, it was
a little bit challenging to follow, too, at times.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's why the AI kind of...
I was like, let's just talk about my people, the AI.
Right.
So give us a little on the Vatican document.
Well, you know, I think there are a couple of concerns that ended up being raised by the document. Just sort of looking at the practical things again. I mean, mention of the possibility of displacement of workers.
You know, right.
I mean, that's a big one, that if one is removing work opportunities, substituting completely for people, that's a danger. You know, the whole thing about deep fakes, that was brought up as well. And so this is the situation where you allow these computers to generate images that are not real and that could then potentially affect the news reporting, affect people's perception of things. And this now is at the level that the deep fakes are not just photos, but also movies, and they're very well done. And the claim is being made, I've seen it in several different places, that it may reach the point that it'll be almost impossible to distinguish that,
right?
You know, just by looking at the photo or the video itself. You'll have to have all kinds of other data outside of the video in order to be able to say, oh, this is just a fake.
Did you see the deep fake of Pope Francis where he was wearing the Balenciaga
the puffer jacket? Oh, yeah. Wasn't that amazing?
And it was really, I was glad they did it of Pope Francis because it kind of got your attention. Like, you could present this major world figure in a way that he didn't present himself at all. And it wasn't disrespectful. It wasn't any gross or anything like
yes.
that. But like you looked at it and you went, I don't know, did he wear that coat or not? Like, you can't tell by looking at the picture.
That's right. And that means it was a really good deep fake.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're kind of scratching your head.
Yeah. But that gives you a sense of, again, our powerlessness before this technology in some ways. I don't have the sensory capabilities to detect when it's deceiving me.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think, you know, Pope is emphasizing that in this document. And it's real. I think as it gets better and better, it's just going to be more and more tricky. And when it is moving pictures, right, when you actually see something moving,
yeah.
it has a way of just drawing you in and you want to say, well, this is real. They filmed it. That's always been my sort of first reaction. And so, again, if it's seamlessly done, then right. it's going to be very hard.
Right, right. And which just creates there's one side of that is, well, if we can't tell, we'll fall for it. The other side of it is, if we can't tell, we will just stop listening to one another. Like I won't trust the news ever. There won't be anything to trust as
yes.
far as the media goes.
Yes, I think yeah, and we sort of went through some of this with the whole fact checking, you know, types of efforts by Meta and yeah. and others. And I think those things backfired a little bit. You realize that some of that even. Putatively, facts could be manipulated in many different directions so that certain agendas were being served. And this has come up just in the pure AI world as well.
Yeah.
You may recall Elon Musk was very concerned about having the woke virus, you know, woke mind virus, he called it, you know, being sort of integrated into the AI iterations. And when he was involved in OpenAI together with Larry Page at the beginning,
yeah.
and I think he put in $50 million. Now, of course, it's worth billions.
Right.
And he got sort of sidelined and pushed out of it. So then he went and did his own thing. And part of the motivation for doing his own thing was that he didn't like the direction this was being taken with the woke
right.
being working. I mean, the example I recall, and you may have run across this as well, was that at one point you could ask the AI, this was, I think, the AI from Google. It was something like, draw a picture of the founding fathers.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I think it drew a picture of a bunch of women
yeah.
who were...
Because it wanted to have diversity.
Yes,
it was
diversity.
So it had been programmed in a way where it'd make sure that your images are diverse.
Exactly.
But that's just silly. Now we've devolved into silliness.
Precisely. Right. And we've
yeah.
gotten away from facts.
Right, right.
In a serious way, in a damaging way.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned Larry Page and Elon Musk. I mean, the nice thing about this whole thing is that it's in the hands of billionaires. I feel like we can all trust the billionaire.
I tell you. Wouldn't it be nice if it were so?
We probably can trust some. I just don't know which ones.
Yeah, that's the trick here. You kind of got to be watching all the time, looking over your shoulder, right?
But there is this question of, does this just become we see I think it was Warren Buffett who talks about specialization has a consequence of accumulation of wealth and power in smaller groups. So the more highly specialized things become, well, this is extremely highly specialized.
It is.
And so it means wealth and power getting accumulated. It's not like, you know, when the main technology was hammers and saws. Well, everybody can use a hammer and saw. When the main technology is this obscure mathematical magic that people are doing.
And the fact that it's not only obscure and mathematical and complex, terribly complex, but to feed the databases and to even get the hardware, these, you know, NVIDIA chips and so on, it's just hugely expensive. So the training, they call it training, that you have to do, ends up costing hundreds of millions of dollars. So that immediately excludes all kinds of people, right? None of us have those sorts of resources except for a few of the billionaires and government entities.
Right.
So, yeah, it becomes an exclusive arrangement on many levels.
Let me ask you about one other. Oppressive governments, like, say, the Chinese, these tools, they really just seem like, again, another great concentration of power where people can be oppressed.
Yes. And, I mean, that oppression, I think, is going to manifest itself most notably through heightened surveillance. Because, you know, the difficulty with surveillance is if you and I have to sit in front of a camera watching other people, we don't have time, but the machines can do it.
Right, that's right. Father Tad Poholchik is our guest from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. We're talking about AI today, so a little bit of a different take with Father, but you are welcome to get involved in the conversation. 888-318-7884. We've kept some folks waiting. We'll get you right on the line with Father when we come back on Catholic Answers Live. Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carla Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they're our allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. We have a real priest with us today, not an AI priest, Father Tad Poholchik, from the Diocese of Fall River in Massachusetts, but now lives in Philadelphia because he works at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And you were telling me you travel a lot to
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, I do a lot of talks around the country, a lot of clergy work, which I thank God for. I just love speaking to clergy groups. It's an opportunity, I always say, to form the formators, and, you know, just such a privilege.
Well, they must, like, say you're the pastor of a Catholic parish. You must, like, people must come to you and say, what should I do in this situation,
Precisely.
Right? And
I mean, whether it's,
and it's
in
all
vitro
changing.
Fertilization, whether it's, I mean, these things come up. And
so you're training or helping to train.
Yes. And, of course, you know, the whole transgender thing has been big, and a lot of priests are just kind of scratching their heads again, wondering how they should answer this, what kind of policies they should have in their parish schools, you know.
Yeah, right. So what got you onto the AI thing? You just thought this is a major thing I gotta...
Yeah, I mean, the AI clearly has ethical and, I mean, even bioethical, you know, angles to it in the sense that a proper sort of understanding of the anthropology, of the kinds of beings that we actually are,
Yes.
Affects the ethics. And that's true when you go in any other direction in bioethics as well. There's always this kind of notion, some kind of a cardinal notion of what the essence of man is that has a normativity and speaks to us in terms of yes or no by our, in terms of our own actions.
Yeah.
So it's important, I think, to ferret these out as this becomes more and more of a widely disseminated phenomenon.
All right, let's take a few calls on AI. We'll start in California. Ryan, watching on YouTube. Welcome, Ryan. Go ahead with your question for Father Tad Poholchek.
Hi. Just as a warning, I noticed last time I called there was a bit of a delay, and it results in me like sort of cutting people off a lot, so just keep that in mind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my question is, in light of the new Vatican document on AI, would it be sinful to have an anti-AI stance? For example, I don't believe the technology is intrinsically sinful, and I agree with the document that it's capable of both great good and great bad in the abstract, but I also believe that in practice, the bad may so outweigh the good that it would be unwise to pursue this tech further. And I also have a lot of, you know, concerns about, you know, the misinformation in the realm of the arts, you know, some copyright issues going on.
Sure.
And, you know, other things like that. Yeah.
So you want to know is, do you, are you on a sturdy moral ground to be a rejecter of AI?
I want to know if I, for example, the document seems to be more like, seems to have a neutral view of AI overall.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if I would be in good standing with the church if I were to have an anti-AI stance, as in...
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, okay. That's a good question, Ryan. I mean, in a sense, what you're doing is you're making a prudential assessment currently around the state of the technology at the moment. And you're saying, in light of what I know about the technology, what I've seen, what I understand about it, it strikes me that for the most part, this is going to probably play out in ways that are not so good, not so desirable, so I'm going to hold to a basically an anti-AI posture. And, you know, is that unreasonable? Well, no. I mean, if you've done some of the work of assessing this closely and that's the conclusion you come to, I think, you know, in conscience, that's what we all seek to do to better our wisdom and to live in a path of wisdom. Now, you know, I myself would not make the same assessment, probably. I think I would come down indeed more, a little more, on the neutral or positive side, you know, recognizing that there are going to be uses and probably a plethora of uses that will be good uses and will bring all kinds of benefits, but acknowledging at the same time that the risks are very great. So I think people will have a different final prudential assessment on where that line falls. And I don't think it would be correct to say that if you have an anti-AI position in view of that prudential assessment that somehow you're outside of what the Catholic Church, you know, holds on this matter.
Okay, Ryan?
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. No delay. It was tempting to joke around and act like there was a delay on the line. But did you see me resist the temptation to be an annoyance to Ryan? Thank you, Ryan, very much for the call. The number here, 888-318-7884. Now we go to Omaha, Nebraska, where Kylie is listening. And if you're listening in Nebraska, you're probably listening on Spirit Catholic Radio, just like Kylie. Hey, Kylie, you got a question for Father Tad Poholchek?
Yes. Sorry if my four-year-old or baby talk in the background.
We like four-year-olds and babies. We're very pro four-year-old and baby, Kylie.
Perfect. Perfect. I was told by one of my colleagues that an Eastern European country was doing virtual or like AI confessions. One, is that accurate? Two, what is that? I was mind boggled. Is that true? That's my question.
Yeah, I've heard about the question being raised whether you could do some kind of confession to an AI agent that, you know, was posing as a priest or something. And obviously you could not. I'm not aware of this being, you know, generally available. Certainly it wouldn't be sanctioned by the church. It would have to be something more like a general counselor, a person who you were turning to share your concerns, worries, troubles, maybe sins, you know, in some kind of clinical setting. There might be some setup like that, but certainly nothing that the church would approve.
I think it was a Protestant church in Switzerland.
Oh, it was Protestant.
Yeah,
and that's what it was. There
yeah,
it was.
And they had a, like, it was the AI Jesus you could talk to, I think.
Oh, okay. Huh, yeah.
Which, I have to say, my immediate reaction to that is, is a cringe.
Me too.
But it's not a reasoned reaction. It's just a cringe. Is that yours, Kylie?
That is exactly my cringe, but I thought it was the Catholic Church like allowing that. So I was like, is that a thing? So that was my question. So I'm happy it wasn't that. So, yeah.
Oh, very okay. good. Very
Thank
good.
You.
Thank you, Kylie. Thank you very much. Again, the number 888-318-7884. So you said you take a neutral to positive position. Our earlier caller, Ryan, said he takes a negative position. What if you took a kind of limited position, like I want it to go this far and no farther?
Yeah, I think there might be good grounds for doing something like that, or saying at least that the deployment of the technology needs to be moderated and slow so that we can see the kinds of side effects that are going to spin off sideways,
right.
and, you know, the harms that are going to be done, and then retool and recalibrate and make the thing, you know, really serve human goods.
Yeah. Because if they could make a robot that would fold my laundry, I would say that's far enough. We've gone far enough. But I like that, but no further.
Yeah.
Let's just stop there.
Okay. I think I'm with you. That
I will
certainly
pay for
be,
that robot,
know,
too.
And maybe, yeah, Roomba-type, you know, vacuuming.
I already have the Roomba, Father.
Okay.
It might be spying on me. I don't know.
Right.
And maybe it talks with the other appliances about me, but I just want that fold the laundry guy. Again, 888-318-7884. I'm going to take line one. I just want to let you guys know. If you could let line one go, I'm going to go to Tina in Long Beach, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Tina, welcome. You there with me, Tina?
Yes. Oh, am I on air?
You are on air with Cy and Father Tad, yes.
I met you yesterday, Cy.
I know.
A long time nosy.
I was going to say, I think this is the same Tina from Long Beach I met yesterday. It's very nice to talk to you again, Tina. Go ahead with your question.
Take me away. Well, I'd actually thought this a few weeks ago. I was thinking how the Vatican should be open to loading anything and everything from the Vatican archives or whatever it has. I mean, for instance, this document, should they be considering moving forward in that direction?
Like cooperating
with
the
AI. Put the morality into AI.
Ah, all
yeah,
right, Father.
I think that's a very good question. And I think my own sense here, I mean, to be honest, I've had the same thought. I have a small website of my own, fathertad.com, and I put out all my writings there, and I say to myself, do I want AI to be coming in and vacuuming up all of my data to be included within the large language models that they're generating? And I say, well, yeah, probably. Why not? I mean, in the sense that I've tried my best to write intelligently, you know, on the site, and I hope that there's some good there. And if that ends up sort of influencing a moral sense that gets conveyed by the AI, and if the Vatican documents similarly, you know, have that effect, that's something I think we would consider to be good. And there's maybe another sense in which you say, well, we want to have a fair representation of the world or the reality that is around us. And this is going to obviously include a lot of Catholic inputs. So,
right. Well, and isn't it correct that, you know, the Catholic Church is open about all their documents. They want people to see them as much as possible.
Yes, and read them.
So
yes.
It would make sense if, like, your stuff, your works may be personal. You're not ready to, because it's copyrighted. But the Church has plenty of information that has been written over the centuries that should be ready and out there.
Absolutely.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And there's some of those church writings, you know, like, for example, Thomas Aquinas, that I think a lot of Catholics, you know, never get the chance to hardly scrape the surface of. But if this can be in some fashion incorporated, and then they can get access to insights of the wisdom of Thomas Aquinas, you know, a just towering intellect, then that's again, all for the good. But, you know, the problem here is, where do you put the kind of guardrails onto AI? Because I think there's going to be, you know, you can put in a lot of bad stuff in there, and it's going to affect the types of answers that come out the other side. I always say junk in, junk out. That's the challenge here. And I think the Chinese,
right.
Yeah, they've been working on this recently and trying to simplify the whole procedure.
that's the guardrails need to be developed.
They do.
But we can't wait for all the guardrails to be in place necessarily, especially for the moral aspect.
But I think the point, it seems to me, that undergirds what you're saying, Tina, if I'm correct about this, is that the church wants to participate in culture, wants to be, we don't want to be left out of the conversation. We're not trying to keep anything secret except confessions and maybe a few other things, but
yes.
You know, like that's the point of Christianity, is that it's for everyone, it's intended for everyone. So we can't really take the view, oh, we're going to just reserve ourselves from this.
Yeah, and there's a sense in which Christianity at its heart is kind of open source. We want it to be for everybody.
Right.
You know?
Right. There's no levels,
right.
There's no secret handshakes you learn.
Mark Zuckerberg could be, you know, a next step.
What, to get Mark Zuckerberg into the Catholic Church?
I said maybe a call to Mark Zuckerberg could be a next step.
Well, I can tell you this. Jesus is calling to everybody. We're doing our best to get it out on the air, Tina. But he's calling to every heart. And I do agree with you. I think that at root, that's the main thing, to call as many to Jesus as we can. Tina, thank you. I have to take a break now, but it was nice meeting you yesterday, and I thank you for the call today.
Okay.
All right. All right, we'll be right back with more. We're talking AI with Father Tad Poholchik from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. More right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
EWTN Radio is growing. Are you an experienced radio producer looking for an opportunity to help forward Mother Angelica's mission of evangelization? We need a passionate, multi-skilled, talented professional who can manage all aspects of producing world-class radio programming. You could be the newest member of the EWTN Radio family. If this is you or someone you know, email a resume and cover letter, including salary requirements, to humanresources@ewtn.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Father Tad Poholchik is our guest. We're talking about artificial intelligence with Father Tad, and you are welcome to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation. The one thing I did feel reading that Vatican document was, you know, the Catholic Church has a very deep well to draw from when new things come.
Isn't that refreshing?
It's just so wonderful. Like the context that they put the discussion in about how human intelligence is not, it's not like what's being described in these machines. And then they take several paragraphs to describe what human intelligence is from the Catholic perspective. And you're like, that's so beautiful what we have in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly pushing back against what I'd call a reductionist tendency.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just turn everything into sort of lowest common denominator. It's just bytes and information in some raw form. And they're saying like, no, a human intellect and, you know, it's dealing with intelligence is not just a computer algorithm running in our brains. It's something much more. It's a kind of mysterious correspondence to the reality that's around us. It's connected to knowledge. It's connected to willing certain things for what? For good. Recognition that there's good and not good, et cetera. So this gets much more textured and deep very quickly when you plumb the depths of our tradition.
But the better the machines get at tricking us, the less I think we'll be willing to admit a difference between them and us. And
that's
what worries me, is that especially, you know, kind of vulnerable people like children, for example, they cannot tell the difference between fantasy and reality. And if you present fake people as real people, they're not going to be able to distinguish those.
That's right. And I mean, the other thing is, I mean, there's a vulnerability that you're hinting at with children there, but I think there's a vulnerability for others, for example, who live very isolated lives.
Right, yeah.
And so I've heard about these new kind of bots that they're hooking up to AI, and they promise that they'll be able to have, you know, very wonderful conversations with people who are maybe left alone in nursing homes and so on. And it's like, well, but I mean, is this really the direction we want to be going? This is not real interaction. This is, you know, just a machine with all kinds of programming making itself look like it's a companion, but it's not a companion at the end of the day. Companionship, again, goes deeper and can't, you know, we can't be satisfied on those levels. So I think that the Pope is trying to, in this document, eke out some kind of a position here along those lines, that it can go to a certain point, but no further.
You know, I will say this, Father, because I know that there are many non-Catholics listening, and it's only 117 paragraphs, I think, this document. And especially if you're an engineer, you know, a computer engineer, computer scientist, I would encourage you read this document, because it's not a document, it's not condemnatory at all. It's saying, here's things that in the experience of the Catholic Church, 2,000 years experience, in the light of reason and revelation, you really should consider or must consider as far as what intelligence is and how to interact with the artificial kind.
Yeah. I think that's good advice. I'd encourage people as well who are involved in any way in this industry to spend some time with the document. I couldn't agree more. The problem is a lot of Silicon Valley types, they sense that there are value questions and ethical questions somewhere around the perimeter, but they're sometimes just so focused on making this, you know, work and be successful that they feel like they don't have time for it. And so here you can say the Vatican has done, big work of sifting through and giving us some important reflections on the matter.
Yeah, and it won't take you long. It's not a long read. Amy is in Kentucky. Thank you for waiting, Amy. Go ahead with your question for Father Tadpole Holchek.
Hi, I'm glad we're talking about this. I don't have a question per se. I more or less have a comment. I know I was on with Dr. Carlo Broussard a couple of weeks ago for some other reason, but me being blind, I don't see a problem with AI, but I'm like you guys. I think we need to put strict limits on it. So many people have told me, I've got a friend that says, okay, is either of you old enough to remember the 80s Knight Rider?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I'm old enough. Well, it was David Hasselhoff. It's not possible to forget that, Amy. We can't forget David Hasselhoff.
Well, everybody goes, there are people who go, you need Kit. I said, well, that would be wonderful, except for one thing. I said, the way my luck runs, sometimes the sucker would malfunction. Yeah. Then what would I do?
But let me ask you this, Amy, because while we have Father here, as a blind person, what do you kind of hope that AI will do to be assistive in your life?
Well, it's already doing it. I have an Echo device. AI is, I very seldom have to have anything read to me anymore. I live in an apartment complex, and sometimes management will put written notices on the door. And through, I have an iPhone, and there's an app you can download called Seeing AI, and you hover your back camera over whatever you need read, and it'll help you to orient it this edge or that, whatever is not visible. But once you get it situated good, it'll say hold steady, and you hear a little bit of music, it processes it, and you can scroll through what it sees.
Wow. Yeah, that's not something I would have even thought of as a person who doesn't deal with that. Let's get a comment from Father.
Yeah, I think that's kind of assistive technology in the truest sense of the word, and to look for other opportunities to provide assistance for those who have, you know, various limitations, whether it's blindness, whether it's paralysis or other types of things where they could benefit from this. I think a lot of people have hopes that this will just improve people's lives in those kinds of situations. And I think there is the potential for that.
Amy, I'm going to leave it there and say thank you. I'm very happy that you're getting in the habit of calling us. It's always nice to get your calls. But I've got several more on the line that I would like to let ask Father their questions. Mary is in Alton, Illinois, listening on the Covenant Network. On the Covenant Network app. Mary, go ahead with your question for Father.
All right. Hello.
Hello.
My question is, what about praying with AI? I ran across it on accident on YouTube, a rosary meditation that I thought was Archbishop Sheen's recorded voice, but something didn't feel right. And I read down in the description the small print, and it said it was artificially generated voice, and it left me feeling really uncomfortable about praying with this artificial, because I remember his voice. I'm 66.
Well, let's.
So what about Father, about praying with it?
Well, that's an interesting question. I have to be honest, I haven't considered that. I mean, there's a way in which praying with technology already happens, right? I mean, most of us have apps on our cell phones, at least us who are priests, where we do the Liturgy of the Hours. We read it ourselves off of that. But when you drive, you can ask your phone to read it to you because you don't want to be reading it while you're driving, and you listen and pray in that way. So there's a sense here in which we are already doing that. I think, you know, you may be expressing concerns that it was trying to pass itself off as Fulton Sheen. And to the extent that there was some misrepresentation of who was doing the speaking, then, of course, there is a kind of objection and problem at the core of that. But praying with the assistance of some technology, I don't see anything that's intrinsically going to be a problem. The other thing, you know, when I pray the rosary sometimes, I have set up a little PowerPoint that has images for the different mysteries. Oh. And I flip through them, you know, either on my laptop or my phone. So that's, again, technology assisting me as I pray. So to the extent that it assists you, I don't think there's anything fundamentally problematic there.
Okay, Mary?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. A wonderful question. Thanks very much. If I seem like I'm going quickly, I am. I just want to get everybody on with Father. Jennifer is in Connecticut listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Jennifer, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Father Tad.
Okay. So my question is, years ago, before AI kind of was really into the main conversation, someone had said to me, and it was really kind of provoked some serious thinking about AI, was that God created man and Satan in his constantly copying God, but he can't be God, made AI. And it's a carbon copy of his version of man. So I thought that was really an interesting perspective. And it's always made me a little wary when I started hearing how AI was becoming more and more valid in our society.
Yep.
Because that conversation popped back into my head, and I thought, huh, that's really interesting.
Let's see.
It just makes me pause.
Yeah, so let's let Father answer, because I'm just very short of time. Father?
Yeah. The idea of copying man, I think there is a sense in which AI is trying to do that very clearly. That's what intelligence is sort of a unique mark of our humanity, and they are trying to, in some fashion, recapitulate, encapsulate that, and, you know, put it into a bottle. But is that per se something disordered? I don't know that it is, but I also hear your concern in the sense that I mentioned earlier the bots that are for potential companionship for people who are alone, and I think some of those even look a lot like people. They're making them very sophisticated. They move like people. Their lips move. Their eyes blink. So you're just getting more and more into a human form and making this super high-level copy. And I think at a certain point, this seems to, infringe on our uniqueness. We need to be careful that we're not looking for some kind of substitute for ourselves that says, you know, we're not good enough and we've got to put ourselves into machines. And Larry Page has spoken about that, the whole notion of uploading our mind or our brain into computers and then, hey, what do we need man for anymore? So that kind of move is a wrong move, I think.
And we will have to leave it there because you can hear the music. Jennifer, thank you very much for that. I don't want to get uploaded into a machine, brother. I don't.
Me neither.
I feel like I'd be scared in there. I feel like I would be constant. And I also feel like
I wouldn't be you. And it would be a copy,
right?
You know?
And I feel like I would always be
probably
cold.
A bad copy.
So I don't know why I feel that way. I feel like I would always be cold. I would never be able to get warm in there.
Oh, those darn circuits.
Father, may we and our listeners have your blessing
Absolutely.
Before we go.
Absolutely. May Almighty God bless you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father.
Thank you so much.
Check out, Father Tad is your...
Yes, fathertad.com and also ncbcenter.org.
Father Tad Poholchik, been our guest from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. They do wonderful work. And coming up, Tim Staples right after this on Catholic Answers Live.